Hello and welcome to another episode of All Tomorrow's Festivals, the content series that explores the signals from Edinburgh in August and all the festivals that happen, and explores the signals of that for what it means for the future of the arts, entertainment and culture. I'm Nick Sherrod, I'm Managing Director at Label Sessions and also a slightly reluctant futurist. I'm joined by our content producer and interviewer for this particular episode, Josh Nixon. Josh, hello.
Hi.
So this week is a conversation, or this episode rather, is a conversation that you had with Stacey Burrows, who's, well, at the time I think was still based on the States, she's based out of LA, although she's a Texan originally.
Yeah.
The show's called No Good Drunk. It's on at 12:50 every day in the Pleasance Courtyard in the attic. And Josh, this is the first one of the interviews we've done where... Well, she has kind of an unusual thing that kind of drive her, I guess, to bring the show over. But also she was kind of quite open to the idea that in some ways this kind of should be a documentary.
Yeah, so she made no secret that it was very much originally planned as a documentary. And there's even an album to it as well. So she's released that album, which was going to be part of the soundtrack to the documentary. And that sort of is the through line that leads the show. So there's like, she's retooled a little bit what was going to be the documentary into like a rear projection. It's part of the show, some interviews. And the music that she's put together is the sort of centerpieces that lead through the narrative in between her sort of stand-up conversations with the audience, which is fascinating.
Yeah, kind of really interesting piece. Although interestingly, that kind of theme of sound and music and its role alongside the performance is something that definitely does come up, but has come up quite a lot this year. So it's also it's interesting. So this is another personal story though as well, right? And this is also, yeah, I guess her motivation to make the show happen is also quite personal.
Yeah. So it's originally about her father, and that was the sort of conceit of the story about finding him in an unmarked grave or an incorrect grave in El Paso. And she was telling me a little bit about too, and I won't spoil too much of the interview, is that she had a similar issue with alcoholism with her son, because her dad was an alcoholic, and she was about to launch the show last year, I believe, or a good few years ago now. Forgive me, I'm blurry on the details. She and her son lapsed and was found unresponsive in his room, and that stalled the project, and that's sort of been incorporated into the story too. Her son's okay, as we discuss in the interview. But it's fascinating how these sort of like real life tales that she's very open and honest and sort of really incorporating it into it. It's not just sort of disguised as a conceit. It's like very raw.
Yeah, very raw and very real. So Stacey Burrows, let's head into it. The show's called No Good Drunk. It's on at 12:50 every day at the Pleasance Courtyard in the attic. Although for those of you who can't make it to Edinburgh on this one, at least you can go and find the album somewhere as well.
Yeah.
Let's head into the interview.
To start us off, just a little bit about what audiences can expect this year from No Good Drunk.
Okay, so this is, at its core, it is storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the type of story that I'm telling, which is, it's dense, and it's a little heavy at times, but I'm naturally a comedian, that's what I normally do. But what I did was I wrote songs to tell the hard stuff, you know, because I think it's more palatable for an audience to accept the stories that I'm giving them in song rather than just telling them what happened. I really enjoy that. Now, what I did was I added a film element. So right behind me is a projection. We shot on a Blackmagic pocket cinema camera. So that's a real efficient way, cost effective way to make it look like a 35 millimeter cinema camera, but it's digital. But you don't have to tell anybody that.
Black cameras are gorgeous, seriously.
Oh, they're gorgeous. So I went out to West Texas graveyards and dive bars, and we shot some really nice footage. And so what they can expect is a really personal, intimate hour with me singing songs and telling true stories about no good drunks that have been in my family and that... caused a lot of damage, you know, they caused a lot of damage and they were sick. And I do acknowledge that it's a disease. It's not a choice. It's a disease. And I make that very clear But it's hard to be tethered to someone with that particular type of disorder.
And there's so much to unpack there from how the show was conceived, obviously from it being very autobiographical for one, but also like the different avenues of media that you've crossed. You know, a big part of that, you were talking to me before about how you've been getting the show off the ground for about 5 years now, but is it always been something that's been long gestating? The question that we have asked now is why now? You could tell
Why
us,
now?
and why
Well,
he's responsible
okay.
major.
Why now and why here? Well, I'll tell you, the impetus for the show initially was to give my mother closure. She was suffering from Alzheimer's, and she passed away in October of last year. But before she lost her mind, you know, with Alzheimer's, you lose a lot of things in different orders. And so the mind was slipping, but she always had this lack of closure with a father that she never knew. And she never went to his grave. We found out that he was buried in, I say we, but I found out that he was buried in another woman's grave in a border town in Texas. And I was like, well, I can get to that border town. So I put my kids in my car and I was like, let's go to El Paso. And they're like, all right, whatever. So initially, the reason for the show, the why, was to give my mother closure. Now, I've been working on the show for 5 years, 3 days. 3 days before, and the show is all about addiction and alcoholism, right? 3 days before the show opened, I found my 17-year-old son unresponsive, blacked out in the driver's seat of his car on a Sunday morning at 7 a.m. So he had been experimenting with some drugs, and he mixed too many of the wrong substances, and I thought he was dead. Okay, so. Clearly, that affected the production of this show because I'm like, oh my, like he's part of the show. He was part of the film crew that helped me in El Paso. And so all of this, it was personal to me because it was my mother's hurt. You know, it was my mother's pain that I was trying to, but as a mother, it all came home 3 days before I opened. So I
Oh,
quickly,
shit.
as I always do, anyone that knows my work, and not that I'm someone that people would know my work, but in Los Angeles, people know my work. I always speak the truth, right? I always come from a place of honesty, reality, and vulnerability. And I think that's what draws people to my show because it's not fiction. And I'm not afraid to put reality into the narrative because I feel like that's the only way you can grow and course correct, you know, what's going on in your own personal stories, right? So that's the why. And the why now, because I freaking love Fringe. I'm one of these people that's like, ooh, if I have a story to tell and I can pull it together by August, then that's what I do. I love the Fringe. I'm an enthusiast and I'm a masochist because I'm the kind of person that comes home from Fringe, you know, in the late August. And then starting September, I start writing the next show. This is my third Fringe show in 5 years.
I
And
was
they're
gonna say.
all new pieces of work. Yep.
Yeah, I was gonna say because it's incredible because you debuted a show last year, like as recent as last year, and you're already doing another show, which is incredible.
Well, you know the life is like go, you know, Josh, go back to a year ago. What was happening in your life at that point? You know what I mean? Like, so that's where I write from. I write from what is happening right now. Now, No Good Drunk has been this little baby of mine for 5 years, and the reason I didn't put anything out. I kept the album. The soundtrack is now live on Spotify, but I didn't even release the music because I knew my mom was dying. She died last October. I knew that she wasn't going to make the year. And I thought, when she has passed, I will know that that's the sign from the universe that it's okay to tell this story because I didn't want to bring her any shame and I didn't want to bring her any more pain. But that's why I waited until she drew her last breath so that I could finally tell her story.
And yeah, I listened to some of the album.
Oh, you
Okay.
did.
It was it's fantastic. So I'm very it's made me more curious now as to how it's incorporated throughout the show. Can I before I go any further, can I just ask, is your son okay?
Well,
What
you
is
see, you'll have to come see the show. Yes. And I do reveal that in the show that the reason he's okay is because he, like the other members of my family, he got intervention, right? He has the right mom for this job. I'm extra passionate about issues regarding addiction and disease of that nature. And so weirdly enough, his therapist, the first time I was working with his therapist, I said, I have no idea what to do. And he said, no, you do know what to do. He said, because you called me. He said, you knew who to call. And that's why he's going to be okay. So my son got intervention. And again, you don't know if it worked until they leave rehab. It's an experiment. And I know that relapse is part of recovery. I've learned that. But my son knows that I am always on his side and that I love him very much. And that's not just a platitude. That's a legitimate, like, my bones hurt when he hurts. You know what I mean? So he is okay. And we'll see how he does. But he's home. And he's actually, he's not home. He's in Edinburgh. He just landed this morning with my husband and my other son. Yeah. The funny thing is, he hasn't seen the show. But I told him, I said, you are in the show, honey. You gave me this narrative, and I would be a fool not to incorporate it, because that is why it becomes relevant.
It's absolutely.
Then he said, okay, you know, I would never do it if he said, don't talk about it. I said, I have to. And he goes, I understand that. You know, he goes, I get it. So I have his blessing.
No, that's brilliant. And back to what I was saying before, now that I know your son's okay, and thank God he is.
Thank you.
I was just wanting to know, because like I was saying, I was listening to the music and I was like trying to conjure up all these images in my head, and I was wondering how much it'll match with that and how much this music sort of comes in and out with the narrative of the show.
Right. So that was the trick. Okay. The trick was, when I finished the soundtrack, and that was literally during COVID, that was my COVID pet project, because it kept me sane to write music with my favorite people in LA. Like, I'm blessed to have the most amazingly talented musician friends. And they were like, yeah, we're literally not working. So I said, how about we cut an album? And they're like, oh my, I said, I'll pay you. And they're like, oh great, work? Yes, we'll take it. And we got in the studio, and you know, it's just, I mean, my God, I would do it. You know what I would do? I would do a documentary about the musicians that helped me write this, because they're incredible. But anyway, that's not the question you asked me. The question you asked me was, when I got the soundtrack and I listened to it and I tried to remove myself from knowing the story, I realized that without context, it's kind of disjointed. And you're like, how does all of this fit together? And that's when I said, we've got to do something. We have to put this in some sort of format that makes it make sense. That's when I thought we were doing a documentary. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, okay, this is going to be a film. And then we shot all this stuff and it still didn't feel right, because I'm a storyteller, right? I'm okay on film, but in real life, that's where I come alive. And that's where you go, oh, there's a heartbeat here. And it's there. You're not removed by this screen. You know, you have to have me in the room. That's what I do. So I said, wait a minute. What if it's a film and a soundtrack and a storytelling show? And my director was like, yes, we'll do that. I said, okay, great. Can you help me? So what you'll see in the show is, you will see that thread that goes through all those songs, and it will make sense at that point. And it's sort of like, one of the themes in the show are the two yellow lines that go down a highway, right? Well, in America, they're yellow. I don't know what they are here, but so that's kind of like, the whole thing feels like a road trip, right? Because we were on a road trip when we found his grave, my mom's dad's grave. And I was like, this is a big road trip. So it's a road trip kind of musical soundtrack thing. Did that answer your question?
Well, no, absolutely. And then some. So yeah, it was just, I'm just so fascinated about this process of, you know, of how it's sort of morphed. Cause like a big part of what we talk about, and I've talked about to other people, is like, could you conceive the show as just a live show? Does it have to be a live experience, or does it all kind of be manifested in different ways?
No, in fact, I mean, okay. So I like to dream big. So there's a couple different ways that I would do the show if I had a budget. And I think that's what you're getting at. So here's me asking the universe. All right. Number one, I would absolutely go back and shoot this film as a documentary and have it be, I mean, look, I'm about to say something that's going to sound insane and you're going to go, oh, fucking chill a bit. But you know how, sorry. You know how Beyonce had Lemonade, that concept album? I don't know if you're familiar with a girl named Beyonce, but she's kind of a big deal. Anyway, so she did Lemonade, and Lemonade became this concept album, but each song had this amazing music video to accompany it, which helped her tell the story that she was trying to tell. And there have been concept. I'm not the first person to have a concept album, but I liked that it felt like a visual album, right?
Yeah.
So if I had all the money in the world or somebody wanted to produce it, I would go back and shoot this as a film. And furthermore, I would shoot it in the style of Wim Wenders' Paris, Texas. I don't know if you're familiar with that film.
Oh, yeah.
If you haven't seen it, study it. It's gorgeous, right? So that's what I would do. And yeah, there would be musical interludes, of course. Like, the thing is a musical, sort of.
Yeah.
No. Now, wait, the other question then. I said, so, okay, if it doesn't become a film, what I would hope is that what I would want if I had all the money in the world, when you see the film, I enlisted that, I hired everyone in this thing is the top of their game, right? Mm-hmm. So there's one piece called Tommy. I don't know if you listen to Tommy. It's a very sad story. It's a very sad song, and it's devastating. And I thought, how do we tell this story? Because, trigger warning, it does deal with suicide. I said, how do we tell this story in a beautiful way, but let's not be so literal, you know? And so I hired an aerial artist from Topanga, California. Her name is Lexi Pearl. She's a genius. And we put her in a warehouse with this long red sash hanging from the ceiling of the warehouse. And she does this beautiful dance on the silts. Mm-hmm. And I won't tell you what happens after that, but it's so beautiful. And like the end of that song, you can hear the audience go, you know, and it's just like, that's the only way you can delve in. In my opinion, that was the only way I could do this. That was the only way I could remove us from what really happened, but do it in a very beautiful way. So I also hired swing dancers who we got access to a dive bar in South Pasadena in California. And I put the live band in the dive bar with swing dancers. And I was like, let's just shoot music videos for each track. And what I ended up doing was I cut myself out of it. I cut my performance out of it, but I kept all of the everything that was happening in the back. So now I just sing live as if they're with me. Because if it was a stage production, if it was a stage production with a budget, I would have the swing dancers. I would have the aerial artists. I would have the live band. I would have all of the people that I hired. I was like, I can't bring all these people to Edinburgh. So how can I do it? So I filmed them. So they're behind me, projected on the wall.
Yes, because that I mean, you already answered all my questions for me, which is fabulous. But like,
sorry,
Jill Baltes, this is absolutely brilliant. Thank you for offering up so much.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
You were talking before too about, you know, how you say that you come alive in a live performance, you remove that sort of screen, and you're talking, but you're also talking about all these grand sort of gestures of like putting into a film, putting it as part of the show. What is it that you feel like being in a live setting really benefits this show? Is it like the intimate element or?
Yeah, absolutely. The intimacy. And honestly, you know, Pleasance was really generous to give me a 50 seater, which is intimidating. Although I will say, because it's projected on the wall behind me, there's two sections that you have zero visibility. So I hope I never sell out, because if you're not right in the front, you're not going to see what's going on. So I might take those all sale, but it is the intimacy. And it's like, you know, when there's a live human being who is being vulnerable and honest, and you feel their heart beating out of their chest in the room, because I'm not an actress. I'm not an actress. Everyone says, stop saying that. I'm like, I'm not, though. When I give you the story, I'm telling you, Josh, the story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I wanted an intimate environment. It was really important to me to have a smaller sort of setting where we can just get down to it and talk about it, you know, because it's very delicate.
No, that's brilliant. And I would love to pick your brains a little bit about, you know, the wider scope of things. Like, obviously, you've been a live performer for, you've been in the game for quite a while, for now.
85 years now. Wait a minute. I've been in it a minute. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You've been around the block. Oh, listen to your first rodeo. You know, Texas. Sorry.
Hey. All right. Yeah.
What is it that's, you know, you're obviously, you say you're a glutton for punishment when it comes to the fringe, but what is it that's, you know, positive for you right now in the world of live performance and indeed fear? Is something that comes to your mind?
Well, first of all, it's very personal in that I come from America. And at the moment, all of the funding for arts and grants and things like that are just being stripped away from our government. You know, things that are essential and crucial to humanity. We're not talking about like, oh, it's nice to go see a play. Humanity. You go back, go back to the Stone Age. There was somebody in the corner with a microphone going, hey, let me tell you a story. You know what I mean? Like, we need stories and we need these live experiences and we need theater and we need music. I mean, don't get me started on that. But I will say that in this time, I come from a country that is stripping the arts, right? They're stripping funding to a place where the arts are not only funded, they're celebrated in a way that's so profound that literally the entire city will turn itself over to 3,500 shows for a month. Like, that's tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting hearing your perspective, because like, we've interviewed a few people who are native to Scotland or from around the UK, and they've been seeing a sort of a putback in terms of funding for shows. But so the difference to you coming from the US is it's a much more sort of fruitful in terms of the things around here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the thing that I like the most about it is that I am in a city for an entire month full of people who are weird like me and that are saying, even though this is not a financial endeavor for most of us, it's still worth doing, right? Mm-hmm. It's still worth doing. Anybody that's putting on any show, but especially a friend show, knows that look, I've been working on this for 5 years, but to put a friend show together to get it ready for August, that's at least a year of planning. Okay. I think it's remarkable that there are enough people in the world left that are willing to put in that effort and go, yeah, I get to do the thing.
Yeah.
That's enough. Mm-hmm. It's nice to be surrounded with that kind of energy. I call it I think there's two energies in the world. There's Eeyore energy and there's Tigger energy. I'm in a town full of Tigger energy, and I love theater people, and I love musicians, and I love artists. And when you are surrounded by artists, your life is better. I'm sorry. It's just a better life.
Yeah, yeah. No, I completely agree. And I'm always here for a Winnie the Pooh reference as well. Yeah.
I mean, Winnie the Pooh really started a trend in kind of animal characters that felt like it was fine to just wear a shirt and no pants. And really for that, I think Winnie the Pooh deserves a lot of credit for that.
Trailblazer.
He's a trailblazer. He's the original pants off, dance off. Okay? That's what I'm just saying. Okay.
No, go to Pogo's. He's good.
Okay.
You know, you answered a little bit there at the beginning. So we often like to flip the question on its head. Is that, you know, what is it that's scaring you in terms of the art form? Is there anything that you feel like is a danger? I hazard a feeling it's the realm of funding.
Oh, listen, I mean, to be quite honest, I'm on like the verge of a divorce over the cost of a friendship. Like, my husband's like, what does it cost? I mean, no, I'm serious, but not. But the cost to put on a show over here, and sadly the bulk of it is lodging, you guys know that.
Yeah.
But again, every penny spent on a friend show for me is worth it. I always say, like, oh, I could go to rehab, but that's $20,000. You know, a friend show is, you know, it's less than rehab. So it does things for my mental health that are really beneficial, that I'm like, well, you know, if I had a surgery, y'all wouldn't be, you know, balking. But, you know, the friend show is my, you know, I this morning I woke up and I made myself laugh. I'm staying by myself, but I made myself laugh because I said, I looked in the mirror and I said, honey, you came here to cathart. So let's cathart. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny. It's just very cathartic. And it's like, yeah, we're talking about real issues. But what's a setback? Okay. So the other setback that I'm, the personal setback that I'm having currently at the moment is, I had a team in Hollywood. So my director, my developer, my tech, all of that is in Hollywood. They couldn't come with me. So my awesome tech goddess from last year has joined the team for this year, but this is a very tech heavy show.
Mm-hmm.
So our problem today, not our problem, our challenge today was, she can't see the projection from the booth. So she's off to the side, so she could see me. But the projections are happening back here. So she had to tech the show just completely blind. So we did. And so it was bumpy. My preview was bumpy. But it was like, okay, this is Fringe. And I know that that's going to happen. Like, I'm not a newbie. So I'm like, that's not going to set me back. We just now have to solve other problems. So what we did was we got a baby monitor. So we're going to put a baby monitor in the, we're going to put a camera in the audience, and she's going to have a monitor in the booth. But we couldn't get that set up in time today, but tomorrow we will.
No, I love ingenious like workarounds like that. It's honestly like the creativity comes from the boundaries or over the restrictions sometimes. So especially
100%.
exactly.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, you were talking before about, you know, being surrounded by artists really gets the sort of creative juices go flowing. What are some of the shows that you're looking forward to seeing this August?
Oh, I'm so glad you'd asked. Okay, so these are my faves. Fave. So I'm gonna go with like the big names, and then we're gonna go down to people who are less known. So number one, Gary Starr. He's genius. If you haven't seen a Gary Starr show, do. If you take your mom, just be knowing that he's naked anyway the whole time. But Gary Starr's a genius. The person who made me laugh harder than I've ever laughed in my entire life was Kat Cohen. And she's got a new hour called Broad Strokes. And I believe she's at the Pleasance. This show, she's a brilliant singer, but she's so it. I didn't know I was going to like it as much as I did, but it's so tight. And it's just so, she's a live accompanist and, you know, it's great. Okay. I have some really sweet friends that I've made here at the Fringe. And you know, some I've seen their work before and some I haven't because, you know, sometimes when your shows are too close together,
Yeah, it's
can't
polite.
make it across town. So one of them is Briony Price. Okay, so Briony has this amazing, it's Brionny. Briony Price. She's an English bird in New York was her show last year. And honestly, I've never heard a more beautiful voice come out of a human being. And this is the best part. She is equally as sweet and lovely as her voice is. And she's just good energy. So Briony, absolutely. I don't even know what venue she's at, but I love her. Then there's Michael Trafaer. And I couldn't see Michael last year because our shows were, or no, 2 years ago, because I came in 2022 or 3 years ago, because our shows were too close together. He's doing a show called The Pink List. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Again, another singer. Oh my God, beautiful voice. And then there's Olivia Atwood, who is a friend from LA, and she's doing two shows at Greenside, both different shows.
Oh my
So she's
God.
got a show called Faking It, which was from last year, and she has a new show called Oops, about matchmaking gone awry. And you know, I mean, I just have a very long list. And then Mary Kennedy, she is a Boston comedian who she was on a television show called Shameless. I don't know if you guys got Shameless over here with William H. Macy. But she has a show called Hail Mary. I'm gonna get it wrong. I'm gonna get the tagline wrong, so I'm not gonna say it. Oh, I got it. It's Hail Mary, all of the guilt, none of the grace. I did it.
You got
Yes.
that.
Okay.
Nice.
Damn. I'm gonna be working in PR next. So and then of course I'm gonna see everything at the Pleasance because I really, you know, they curate such an interesting lineup. So oh, and there's a show called Smile. It's Charlie Chaplin story. It's at the Pleasance at like 11 a.m. It's selling quickly, so people should get tickets. That's a guy named Marcel Cole who I met at Hollywood Fringe, which I did in June. And you know, I mean, look, I could talk all day because I not only am I a participant, but I'm a fan. So I'm like, ooh, what are we gonna go see? You know.
Well, that's why I would love to ask the question because, like, the recommendations you get every time I do something like that, there's at least one you haven't even heard of before because there's so much going on.
There's
And that
so many. You have to have someone say, go see this. Oh, shit. I can't believe I forgot my favorites. Okay, my other two favorites. And this is awesome. I mean, the best clown show I've ever seen in my entire life is a show called Mr. Chonkers. And he has been here every year for several years. His name is John Norris. His show is called Mr. Chonkers. And that's really all you need to know because don't know anything. Don't go in knowing anything because it is the most absurd nonsense you've ever seen. And his director, Corey Podell, is a genius and I love her. There's another one, clown show called Furioso, and it's all about toxic masculinity. And he's a Polish clown named Peter. I think that's his real name. I just know him as Furioso. But here's the best part. They are doing a double act. So they're doing Mr. Chonkers and Furioso, and they're calling it Chonkioso. So You can see their independent shows and then you can see them together. And it'll probably be total mayhem, but honestly, I'm here for that.
I'm actually in heaven by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm the kind of person who's like, I will not send you to a show that I don't know is... I have really high standards. And you know, I mean, time is short. We got to see the good stuff. So it doesn't have to be an established act to be good for me. In fact, the lesser known surprises are the ones that I go home going, come on, those are you treating me? Yeah. Of course. That's that. And that is the spirit of the Fringe, you know, to be real. Yeah.
So that was Stacey Burrows. The show, as a reminder, is called No Good Drunk. It's on at the President's Courtyard every day at 12:50 up in the attic. Kind of really interesting, massive, ambitious project. But kind of, I guess, Josh, is interesting. It's right. It's like a massive, ambitious project. But
yeah,
none of her motivation really is to make it into a bigger thing as such. It's kind of just to tell the story and kind of the you know, it's like testament to the power of making, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Like we're saying in the intro, and as for saying for the interview, her original idea was to make it as a documentary, but she's been through the powers that be, obviously not been able to get funding. She's managed to get this story out there over the course of 5 years of making it, just out of sheer passion for telling her own tale. Because she's done a couple of shows before. She had a show last year as well that she'd written, so it's incredible quick turnaround to sort of finish this one and get it out the door as it is. And like it sort of spans into other things as well. Like you will be able to see, because it's an audio podcast, but if you watch the clip, you'll be able to see she's wearing a cap with the logo of the show on it. She's went through and made merch. She's like really done everything to sort of show off the show, which I find really endearing.
Yeah. Good. Okay, so that is enough for this episode, but do have a hunt around some fantastic artists and fantastic stories in all the different episodes wherever you found this particular podcast. To find out more about All Tomorrow's Festivals, almost said All Tomorrow's Podcasts, an entirely different project. All Tomorrow's Festivals, head to labelsessions.com, any of our social handles to find out more. We've still got one more show we're going to showcase, and then we're going to get into some of the findings and some of the trends for the future. But for now, thanks for joining and see you soon.